the book of Genesis, chapter 1, book of Genesis, chapter 1. Again, we do want to be in prayer for those who are without power, whatever problems may be with the weather. I'd like to just read the first verse. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. We live our lives in bodies of flesh. It's the only way that we can live our lives. We live our lives in a world that is filled with difficulty, a world that abounds with great need, a world where we experience sorrow and trials, tribulations, a world where you cannot get through without feeling the burden, the weight of this world from time to time. Yet, with all that being said, you and I that are saved do not have to be bound by the world's way of living. It's really a sad thing today to behold most of those who profess to be saved, and yet their lives are so intertwined with the world, they are bound by the world's way of living. And it doesn't have to be that way. And if it is that way, it's because you or I allow it to be that way. It's due to the life that we live. And the Bible, of course, is a book, an instruction book on how to live. And if we would, and all through the Bible, there are principles laid down for living life. Even here in Genesis 1, where most people say that this is about creation. Well, it is, but it really, that's not the main theme of Genesis chapter 1. The main theme of Genesis chapter 1 is God. And I believe we see a principle. We see several principles laid out in Genesis chapter 1 on how we ought to live. The Bible starts with these principles on living. So when we read Genesis 1, we must not view it as merely an account of creation. It is that. It is an account of creation. But it's much, much more than that. And here in Genesis 1 in verse 1, in the beginning, God. And we've preached from these words before, but those first four words, in the beginning, God. That is an exhaustive statement. In the beginning, God. You cannot fully comprehend what is being said there. But I believe it's a foundational statement. Of course, it's not an accident that our Bibles begin with, in the beginning, God. That's a foundational statement. It is a vital statement. We want to view these words, in the beginning, God. We want to view them as a blueprint for our life. In the beginning, God. I believe in those words we have the purpose of life. We have the meaning of life. The purpose of life is God. The sooner you and I realize that, the less bound we will be by this world. Those who are bound by the world are individuals who think that their purpose is this world. And therefore, they become bound, chained to the world. Life must have meaning. And here is the meaning of life. God. In the beginning, God. It is a declaration of a fundamental truth to living right. If we are going to live right, both from our hearts and outwardly, we have to get a grasp of God. In the beginning, God. What is revealed here in Genesis 1 and verse 1, in the beginning, God, is God's design. We see the world was designed by God. We have record of that here in Genesis 1. But in this opening statement, in the beginning, God, I believe we have God's design for a useful life. To live a useful life. Do you realize that many, many people, when you really get down to it, don't have a whole lot of use? They're not very useful in this world. And the truth is, And I don't mean this the way it's going to sound, but the truth is, when they're gone, it doesn't make much difference in any realm. Because if we're going to be useful, here's the foundation. God. In the beginning, God. This is the design for an extraordinary life. And as we've preached many times, our lives are not to be ordinary. Our lives are to be extraordinary. Something extraordinary happened when the Lord saved our souls. And our life is to result from that, and our lives are to be extraordinary. Our lives are to be serviceable. We're here to serve. We're here first and foremost to serve God. We're also here to serve one another. The Bible makes this very plain. It's very plain as you read the principles of living. Life is not about us. Life is about God. Life is about others. Life is about serving. What God is laying forth here is His design for an influential life. If you want to be influential in your life in a positive way, in a God way, you cannot get away from these words, in the beginning, God. And may I say, this is the design for a worthwhile life. Many people's lives are not worthwhile. I mean, they live lives of drudgery. Here is the key to a worthwhile life. And most of all, here is the key to a life that glorifies God. In the beginning, God. I always find it amazing that the Bible does not open, nor is there any place in the Bible that makes an attempt to defend God or to prove God. The Bible does not make any attempt to prove God. The Bible just states a fact. God. The Bible starts off with a fact. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Now, people can argue with that all they want to. But the Bible opens, in the beginning, God. In the beginning, there was God. Before the beginning, there was God. So we want to look at these words. We want to see six principles for living from these four words. In the beginning, God. First of all, principle number one. God must be a reality in our lives. We see that all through Genesis chapter 1. It begins, in the beginning, God. That is, God is real. Now, as you read through this in Genesis 1, in verse 2, you read, and the Spirit of God. In verse 3, and God. In verse 4, and God. In verse 5, and God. In verse 6, and God. In verse 7, and God. In verse 8, and God. In verse 9, and God. In verse 10, and God. In verse 11, and God. In verse 12, we see God. We see God in verse 14, and God. In verse 16, and God. In verse 17, and God. In verse 20, and God. In verse 21, and God. In verse 24, and God. In verse 25, and God. In verse 26, and God. In verse 27, so God. In verse 28, and God. In verse 29, and God. In verse 31, and God. Who is the chapter about? Sounds to me, it's about God. It's about God. Yes, it's about creation, but it's not merely about creation, and that's not the main theme. God is the theme. And we see that as you read through these verses, God is real. We see that phrase, those two words, and God, so God. But then we see this is not just a figment of our imagination. This God is real. Notice in verse 2, and the Spirit of God moved. So this is about a God who moves. And the Spirit of God moved. And may I say, He moves with purpose. But that's not all. We see that this God speaks in verse 3. And God said. In verse 6. And God said. In verse 8. And God called. In verse 9. And God said. Verse 10, and God called. Verse 11, and God said. You get the idea. But what is brought to our attention throughout Genesis chapter 1 is that God, this God, He moves, and this God, He speaks. And when He moves and when He speaks, He does so with purpose. But not only that, when He speaks, He does so with power. Because we read in these verses, and God said, and then at the end of the verse, it says what? And it was so. And it was so. And that's repeated all through the chapter. God said, and it was so. That's still true today, by the way. God speaks, and it's so. He also sees. Verse 4, and God saw. In verse 10, we see God saw that it was good at the end of that verse. Verse 12, the end of that verse, and God saw that it was good. Verse 18, and God saw that it was good. So God moves, He speaks, He sees, He names. We see in verse 5, verse 8, and verse 10, and God called. He called the light day. In verse 8, He called the firmament heaven. In verse 10, and God called the dry land earth. So He moves. He sees. He speaks. He names. And then in verse 28, and God blessed them. And God blessed them. And He blesses. So as you read Genesis chapter 1, we read those words, in the beginning, God. And He is presented as a living reality throughout Genesis 1. He's not a figment of our imagination. He's not a theory. He is presented as a living reality. And this is for the principle of living, is God must be a living reality in our lives. I believe still over half the population will say that they believe that there is a God. They believe in the theory. They don't know Him, but they believe in the teaching that there is a God. I'm afraid that's as far as it's gotten with a lot of so-called Christians. They believe in the theory. They believe that there is a God. But unless this God is a living reality in your life, it's not going to make a whole lot of difference. It really isn't. Because people who say that they believe God, they curse, they do all kinds of things. But I believe there's a God. But when God is a living reality in your life, what a difference it makes. And this is a principle to living life. He must be a reality in our lives. Which brings us to our second point, which is connected, of course. God must be relevant in our lives. There's not a whole lot of difference between God being a reality in our lives and God being relevant in our lives. As you read through Genesis 1, you see the days of creation. God is relevant to everything He created. There's a connection. As you read through Genesis 1, everything that God created, He was connected to. You can't separate the dry land from God. You can't separate the waters from God. You can't separate the heavens from God. You can't separate the stars from God. He created them, and He's relevant to all of these things. Everything that we read in Genesis 1, God is relevant to, and He's connected to it, or it's connected to Him. That principle must be carried forth in our lives. God not only must be real in our hearts and in our minds, but God must be relevant, must be connected. That means that when you have a problem, God is relevant to your problem. You don't forget to pray. because God is real and God is relevant. You don't run to everybody in the country for a solution because you realize that God is connected to my life. How many today have taken the name of Christian and yet their life in no way is connected to Christ? I mean, that's a farce. Our lives must be connected to God. How many people go to work and their jobs are in their mind, their jobs are not connected with God? That's a separate area of my life. God's over here, here's work, here's school, here's recreation, God's over here. You live life like that, you're going to be bound by this world. You're going to find yourself in the chains of this world. People that live this way, again, they have works over here, schools over here, families over here. Over here is God in church. But it's not connected. There's no connection. So they live their lives like everyone else in the world. But then on Sunday morning or Sunday night or Wednesday night, okay, now it's time to get over into this area of my life, God. But really, they're still thinking about these areas of their life over here. They're bound. God is to be intertwined in every aspect of our lives. God must be relevant. God must be connected. And I believe we can measure just how relevant and just how connected God is to our lives by our relationship to Him. How much do we talk to Him? How much does He talk with us? We've already seen He moves. Do we see God moving in our lives? We've already seen that He speaks. Do we hear God speaking to us? We see that He sees. Do we feel the presence of God? We see that when He speaks, there's power. Do we feel the power of God? Is God relevant in our lives? If we're going to live lives above this world, God must be real. God must be relevant. Again, all these things work together. In the beginning, God. That's the starting point. The Bible starts with God. That is the starting point. And as you follow it through, all the way through the Old Testament and the New Testament, you see it's repeated over and over and over again. God is the starting point. You have to start your day somewhere. Everything has a starting point. And God is to be our starting point. In other words, first, God. First, God. This is a priority and attitude of right living. We need that engraved in our minds. We need it engraved in our hearts, more importantly. Those two words, first God. First God. In everything you do. Well, I'm going on vacation. First God. You can go on vacation, but remember, you take God with you. First God. And you begin each day of your vacation with God. Everything in our life is to start with God. Everything. And oh, how many problems would never exist. How many problems we would never experience if we just began with God. There's a lot of things that would never even come up. There would be a lot of things that would never be an issue in our lives if we just begin, with God. This is our starting point. So we see God must be a reality in our lives. God must be relevant and connected to our lives. God is to be our starting point. And everything in the Bible comes back to this. Everything in the Bible comes back to, in the beginning, God. Everything in the Bible comes back to God. And that's how it is to be with our life. Everything in our life, every aspect of our life, every circumstance of our life, is to come back to God. He must be the starting point. Again, we read, in the beginning, God. What's the subject of the Bible? We've already seen, reading through Genesis 1, God's the subject. That's true all through the Word of God. People like to look at it as a book of wonderful stories. And that's true. It is. Do you realize that every story, so-called story, is about God? Every one of them. We lose sight of the main character. And we mentioned this a couple weeks ago. You think of David and Goliath, and you think of David as the main character. No. God's the main character. I come to thee in the name of God. And again, you think of all the Bible stories. God is the main character. He's the subject. He's the subject. He's the theme. And God throughout Genesis 1. What's the theme of Genesis 1? Well, it's established in the very first words, God. He's the topic. He's the substance. He's the essence. He's the highlight. He's the main feature. That must be so in our lives. God is to be the subject of our lives. When you and I are gone, when we lived our life and we've gone on, and people think about us for a short time. How are we identified in life? How are we identified in life right now? Are we identified by our job? I mean, when you think of a person, the first thing you think is, oh, he's a plumber, or he's a truck driver, he's this, or he's that, or she's this, and she's that. Or do they think, that's a person who goes to church. That's a person who told me about the Lord. What is the subject of our life? Again, the reason a lot of problems crop up is because we have the wrong subject. We subject our lives to the wrong things. What is the theme of our life? What is the topic? What is the substance of our life? What is the highlight and the main feature? I realize we all have other things to do. We don't sit in church 24/7. But what is the highlight of our life? When people look at us, what is the first thing they see? What is the highlight? What is the main feature? In the beginning, God. And everything in Genesis 1 centers around God. Everything. And when we talk about God being the subject of our life, that's what we mean. Everything is the center upon the Lord. Fifthly, God must be the source. Now, we all know that whether you realize it or whether lost man realizes it or not, God is the source of their life. Without Him, they have no life. Now, man does not realize that. I mean, if you pin them down and you ask them, do you believe that God created? Yeah, yeah. And you can get them to admit that, yeah, God is the source of my life, but you watch them. They don't believe it. They don't stop and thank God. They don't pray to God because they don't view God as a source. They get upset if they get laid off from work because why? That's the source of their income. They get upset if the store is closed because that's the source of what they need in their minds. God must be our source. That is, we recognize Him as such. And by that, I mean He's the owner. He's the owner. And as you read the creation account, God is the owner. He's the owner of all these things. But He's not only the owner, He's the dispenser. He's the one that dispenses life. We must view God as our owner. And we must view God as our dispenser. To the degree that we do that, to the degree that we believe that God is the source of everything, that is how mindful we will be to seek Him. I mean, if you believe that God is the source of everything in your life, you will seek Him. If you really believe that, you will seek Him. So we can measure how much we really believe that God is the source of our life by measuring to what degree do we seek Him. Also, if we really believe that God is the source of everything in our lives, will you not draw near to the source? Will you not strive to stay near to that source? You don't want to get too far away from your source. We must realize that God is the source of our life. Realizing that, we lean upon Him. Why is it that so many people struggle leaning upon God? Because they don't really believe that God is the source. Why do they try to figure everything out? Because they believe that they can do that. They believe that they are their own resource. This leads to a life of misery. Sixthly and lastly, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And as you read through, and God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God said, and it was so. Who's in control? God is. And if we're going to live a life not bound by this world, we have to recognize that God is our authority. God is our authority. All through Genesis chapter 1, we are reminded of God's government. If we are going to live lives unbound from the world, unchained from the world, unshackled from the world, we must recognize God's government in our lives. How many people say they believe God and yet have no intention of having their lives governed by the Ten Commandments. Yeah, I believe God, but He's not the governor of my life. Well, if you want to live above this world, you have to recognize and you have to submit to God's government. His claims. He's the Creator. He has claims. He has claims upon everything He's created. He's created. All things are created by God. He has claims upon everything. Again, we've said many times, I get so tired of hearing about this person's rights, this person's rights. What about the rights of God? God has claims. Simply because of who He is. God is our authority. And again, this isn't just on Sundays or Wednesdays or when we're around church people. God is to govern our lives when we're at work, when we're at school, when we're recreating, whatever. When we're at home. We must recognize God is the authority. He has claims upon our lives. His claims upon our lives stem from the fact that He did create us. I mean, even if God never saved your soul, you ought to submit to God's government because He is your Creator. But you see, it's more than that for you and I. He's not only created us, He's redeemed us. And therefore, we ought to want to submit to His government, to His claims. As you read the creation account, speaking of God's government, God's authority, you notice that God sets boundaries in Genesis 1 for His creation. That's part of His government. He sets boundaries. We must recognize the government of God, we must recognize the claims of God, and we must recognize the boundaries of God. And God lays these boundaries forth very clearly in the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not. That's a boundary. God has put up a fence and He's saying, do not cross this fence. That's a boundary. To recognize God's government is to recognize His boundaries. People don't want to be told, you can't go here. Why? Because God said not to. But I want to, and I don't care what God said. Well, your life is going to be misery. You're going to have problems. And then this person comes and they says, oh, my life is a wreck. And you want to say, yes, and let me tell you why. And all of a sudden, they have a God moment. They want God in their lives for 5 minutes, if that, to fix their problem. And then they want to go right back out and do the very thing that created the problem. And then they wonder why they're in this cycle of ruin and devastation. It's amazing. It's just truly amazing. You cannot ignore the boundaries of God and be happy. It's not going to work. You cannot ignore the boundaries of God and live an extraordinary life. You know why today God's people, for the most part, are as dysfunctional as the rest of the world? Because they do the same things that the world does. They do the same things that bring on the dysfunction. So if we're going to live life, we must recognize the boundaries and the standards of God. These six things all stem back to, in the beginning, God. And if we keep these things in mind, these things will keep you from a downward spiritual spiral. If you apply these things to your life, they will keep you from a downward spiritual spiral. They are also the things that bring peace and contentment to life. They are the things that bring assurance to life. They are the things that bring fulfillment to life. Now you show me an individual that has peace, they have contentment, they have assurance, they have fulfillment. There's a happy person. Again, happiness is a result, not a pursuit. And happiness is a result of, in the beginning, God. So we must ask ourselves, where is God in our lives? We ought to live the most extraordinary of lives. When it comes to the end of our lives upon this earth, we ought to be able to look back and say, wow, what a life God gave me. And it's not because, you know, I was able to travel here and there and do this and do that. But what a life when life centers around God. And you never need to apologize to anyone for that. You do not apologize to your children for that. Oh, all our lives we had to go to church. Don't ever feel guilty about that. You made us go to church. Yes, I did. Don't feel one bit of guilt about it either. Not one bit. Oh, you made us go to conferences. We couldn't do this. We couldn't do this. On and on and on it goes. There may be many things that we have to apologize for, but you don't have to apologize for God being in your life. Don't ever apologize for that. In the beginning,